The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, one of the ways of understanding Buddhist practice is that it's nothing really extraordinary. It's taking ordinary activities of our life and seeing how they can be transformed into a path to liberation, to freedom, to deep compassion. And one of these very ordinary activities that has tremendous potential for this kind of transformation is the... You have trouble... You can't hear? So one of these... common activities that I'd like to talk about today because of its transformative potential is the act of listening. And talk about mindful listening. Someone did a study and concluded that people listen about 45% of the day, the waking day. So it's a big part of our life, ordinary part of our life. And what is listening like, and what's the potential there? Imagine yourself up against a large wall, and there's a nice door in the middle of the wall. And so you open the door. And you open the door, and you step through, and you close the door behind you, and you look out where you've come. And you find out that you've come at this beautiful kind of... a spacious panorama, like you have this vista of mountains rolling off in the distance and skies and space. And it's just vast, and you get a sense of the vastness and specialness and of the natural world out in front of you. And you realize there's whole universes, a whole, you know, big, big world out there to be explored and to be discovered. So then you turn around and you look at that door again, the wall from that side. And so you open the door again, and you step through and close the door behind you, and then you look and see, and there also, it's a huge, expansive vista, and it goes on different mountains and rivers and valleys that go on and on for a long time. Both sides of the door, it's a lot of vast worlds to be discovered. So, listening is the door to these two different worlds and realms. The door, listening is kind of like it's called the ecotone, the space between two different biological zones. And so on one hand, we have the world out there, beyond our eyes and ears, the world that we can listen to. And it's a universe, it's vast. You can explore it for forever. And then equally vast is the world inside of us that we can listen to and be aware. I think most people don't understand, have no sense of how vast the universe is inside your skull, inside your heart, how big that is. But my sense is that it's as vast and spacious as whatever's out there. And listening is that door, and the idea is to keep that door open. Not to step through the door, close the door, and just look one direction, but rather to keep the door open so that we can see both vistas, we can see both directions, and be aware of what happens when we're listening. So that means mindful listening means not only to be mindful and present for what you're listening to, but also to be mindful and present for yourself as you're listening. And there can be a lot going on within you as a listener. One of the things that goes on as a listener is we forget what we hear. I also read some studies that concluded that by the time someone finished speaking, we tend to only remember half of what they said. So I should test you now. How much have I said? And then within a few hours, it's 20%. You know, so within a year, you know, I don't know, maybe all you remember from this talk is that image of the door and the vistas. What was he talking about? Doors? So, you know, it's normal to, you know, to forget, normal enough. But to really listen so we can really register and take in what's being said, but also really take in and register who we are as a listener. What is it that we're, what's our subjective aspect that goes on when we listen? Not to tune out ourselves because we're so engrossed in what we're listening to, but also not be so tuned into ourselves that we don't really notice what other people are doing. One of the things about listening is that's, I think, significant is to distinguish it from hearing. Listening, the way the word is used in English is that it's an active, deliberate activity. We have to want to listen. We have to engage in the act of listening. Hearing just occurs. You know, you don't have to do anything to hear except just be awake, I suppose. And if a noise is loud enough, you'll hear it. We could have an image, a postural image of someone who's listening, and it's pretty easy to come up with various kind of gestures of what someone's doing when they're listening. You know, you can take your hand behind your ears and kind of lean with your head to one direction, tilt your head, and that would be a sign someone's listening. But what would you use for hearing? What would be the postural gesture for hearing? As soon as you put your ear, you tip your head up and put your hand behind your ear, you're listening, you're not hearing. You're hearing as well. But hearing doesn't have a gesture, I think. In my, what do you think? Is that you agree with that? Or does someone want to try a gesture to show us how you hear? No one? Okay, so I guess that's my idea stands. The hearing just occurs, but listening is a deliberate, intentional act. And as an intentional act, it's connected to all kinds of aspects of our inner life, our values, what we want to do, our preferences, our emotions, our feelings, our responses to the world. Anything that's intentional is a part of this big universe behind us. And so as we listen, we can start becoming more aware of what is going on behind us. And same thing for the person we listen to. There's things going on in them beyond the words. Can we listen in some ways beyond the words, behind the words? Why are they speaking? What is their motivation? What are they trying to accomplish? We can listen with our eyes because there can be body communication as well. Their posture, their gesture might be very important to understand what they're trying to say. And so we can look and watch as well, and listen with our eyes. What's going on besides the words? As a listener, because it is intentional, we could listen in a hurry. Hurried listening. Or hurried hearing. Like, you know, finish speaking so I can say what I want to say. You know, like, get over, you know, and as soon as someone finishes speaking, we rush in with our words, you know, because, you know, we don't want to waste a lot of time hearing, you know, listening. There's important things to be said, so why listen? So we can kind of listen in a hurry, like we're not really taking it in. To listen mindfully is to listen with time. To listen mindfully is to listen in a relaxed way. And one of the ways to listen in a relaxed way is don't stop listening when someone has stopped speaking. But continue to listen after they finished. In other words, let there be a pause where we can take in, make space for what just happened, what was said. And that has a number of advantages. One is that if you pause after someone speaks, they might have more to say. That's interesting, that provides more information. That if you rush in with your opinion, your idea, then you don't let the person kind of finish what they're doing or carry on further. Also, with that pause, you get a chance to listen to yourself and find out what your response is, what your reaction is, what the first things you want to say are before you say it. It's really great to avoid saying things that you later regret. I read recently, I thought it was a wonderful quote. Only God will ever know the anger you didn't express. I mean, you know, right? But no one else maybe knows because you don't, you know, you just... But only God knows. And I guess for Buddhists, they would say, only your karma knows. You know, it's consequential sometimes not to speak. So you want to kind of know what you're saying, what you're doing. So to pause, to let some little bit be there and listen what's going on in a deeper way. There was once upon a time a boy who came home from school late, and maybe late for dinner. And his mother was annoyed because this happened too many times, maybe, or something. So she said, you know, why are you late? And he said, because on the way home, I stopped to help a friend whose bicycle broke down. And the mother said, you don't know anything about fixing bikes. And the son said, no, I don't. But I decided to stay there and keep him company while he was crying. Isn't that something? So the mother was in a hurry. She had her opinion. She was listening through the filter of her ideas, her memory of past experiences with the son, perhaps. And so she was rushing to judgment. And I bet after hearing the son say, I was there to keep company with a friend who was crying, I bet her shoulder sank, or I bet she kind of like, oh, okay. She changed her mode quite quickly. So to listen, take time to listen, take time to find out what is there, is a really important part of mindfulness practice. And one of the skills, one of the things we want to develop in mindfulness practice, in Buddhist practice, is the ability to do nothing. The ability to feel comfortable with silence. The ability to be comfortable with solitude. The ability to be comfortable with not getting, needing anything to come from relationships we're in. Just to be present, to make space and time to listen, to hear, to let something deeper go on. There's a story that's often told in our tradition that comes from the Indian text called the Ramayana. And Rama is walking in the forest with his attendants, with his friends, and he starts hearing a very faint whisper in the woods. And he asks his attendants, his friends, do you hear that? Do you hear anything? No, we don't hear anything. So he kind of goes in the direction of that sound, and very faintly starts hearing his name being spoken. Rama, Rama. So he goes and he asks his friends again, do you hear it? No, we don't hear anything. So he goes and follows it, and finally he comes to this big boulder. And he listens. It seems like the words, the sound, is coming out of the boulder. Rama, Rama. So he takes his two hands and he places them on the boulder. And then the boulder dissolves, breaks open or something, transforms. And there's some woman or being or person that has been somehow frozen inside the boulder through some magic. And with him touching carefully his hands on the boulder, it breaks open and breaks the spell. So I like the story a lot because especially because it's his name that's being called. And it's something very faint that only he can hear. And it's something in this story that's frozen, you know, locked up. And sometimes we have to listen really carefully to the faint whispers inside of us to hear what's really calling us, to find out what's really going on. If we are in a hurry with our minds, if we're thinking a lot, planning a lot, preferring a lot, wanting to do a lot, mind is spinning around in stories and ideas and planning that we do, it's very hard to listen to ourselves. And so part of practice is to learn how to be quiet enough, to learn the skill and the ability and the direction and the tools and the value of becoming quiet enough that we can hear what's going on below the surface chatter of our mind. the surface kind of discursive thinking that goes on. And what is calling you? What's inside of you? It will break open if you listen to it really, really carefully and well. But even more, I don't know, more important, but also what is it that is deep in the other person you're listening to? What do you listen to when you listen to a person? Do you really listen to the other person to really know the person? Or do you listen to the person just enough so you can get in edgewise and tell them what you think is important to tell them? To really listen, to really get to know someone, that requires listening. And the term that I've heard in recent years that I like is active listening. And active listening is the act of intentionally making a point of listening to someone actively, but actively not just because you're quietly listening, because you're also using your words and your body language to show that you're listening, to engage and support the listening so someone feels heard. So to do that, I think it really helps to be relaxed. To listen well to someone else, to listen well to yourself, you have to be relaxed, at ease, which is not an easy thing to come to, especially socially. But here is a really important point about, I think, active listening. To really, because if you become a really good listener, if you're really listening to someone well enough that they feel really listened to, it helps put them at ease. The act of listening, you know you're listening well to someone when it helps them become more at ease. It might not be dramatic, it might be they're really anxious and you just get a little bit less anxious. But people really feel listened to, something inside often kind of gets soothed or settled or relaxes in the other people as well. Especially in conversations where people are doing hurried listening. Hurried listening, hurried speaking is not conducive to relaxation. And more important, it's not conducive to everyone in the party, everyone talking, to listen deeply to the Rama, to listen deeply to that which is deep inside that maybe is often overlooked or ignored or blocked or frozen. So to listen with enough space and time and generosity of spirit and presence, caring, that the other person has a chance to reflect deeply, to feel deeply, to talk deeply, to hear something else come out, is a big part of this. Active listening involves having the other person really feel like they've been heard. And so you do that with your body language, you're really there and present. And you also do it by acknowledging what you hear. And say, repeat back what you've heard. So really, they know that you've heard. But also, so you can get corrected if you didn't hear right. Even if you don't get it right, the fact that you try to repeat it back sometimes means you're really trying to listen, and people appreciate that. And then they can say, well, it was a little bit different, and this is how it was different. And then active listening often involves empathy, where we feel something about what's going on for the person emotionally, not just what they're saying, but what's the tone of their voice, what's the emotional qualities that go with it. And so that requires sometimes, for some people, a choice to tune into that, to pay attention to that. What is a person actually feeling as they speak it? That's one of the problems, with email, as probably all of you know, is that sometimes emails don't contain any of the emotionality, any of the context of the body language, anything, the tone of voice, that lets you know how the communication is being intended. And, I've had communication where it just seemed like it was really rude, cold, mean-spirited, rude. And, I knew the person, let me try to put it myself into how they speak, into their way of speaking and say, I don't think that's how it is. Actually, they had this lilt or this kind of little tone, that they tonality, and I could hear the same sentence they wrote being spoken in a way that doesn't feel rude. It doesn't feel just, it's just kind of like, their way they speak that can be quite caring. You know, I've sometimes been put off by some of the emails I get, like, you know, I'll reply. Show them, you know, and they completely miss, you know, then soon, you know, completely miss what they're coming from, and then they get this rude email back, and before we know it, we have war. And I wonder how many times a war can betray something simple as that. So to listen is a choice. It's something we do intentionally. We can listen or pay carefully attention not only to words, but also what's behind the words. We can listen to why someone speaks. And also we can listen to why we listen. What are we doing when we're listening? What's our attitude about listening? What are we trying to do when we listen? What's happening while we're listening inside of us? Are we formulating our response? Are we tuning out? Have the hindrances come up so we're caught up in desires and aversions? Are we clear and present? Are we relaxed? How are we as we listen? So we can listen to something deeper. What's the tone of the voice of the person speaking? What's their body language convey? What are they... you know, what's behind their words? What can we listen deeply? Some of you might have known, heard the story of the couple went for a couple of counseling to the therapist, and the therapist at some point recognized there was an issue here in communication, so it turned to one of the spouses and said, you really need to listen to your spouse well. For next week, listen. And so the next week they came back to their couples counseling and they said it didn't help. And so then the therapist said, oh, don't just listen to what your spouse is saying. Listen to what they're not saying. What's not being said but is in the room, in the communication. To do that, to do this intentional, active listening, mindful listening, does require a willingness, temporarily at least, to put aside our agendas or our preferences or our judgments or our preconceived ideas of what's going on. It does require letting go of something. And you have to let go of many of the same things that we learn to let go of when we meditate. In meditation as well, we get caught up in our thoughts. We get caught up in our judgments. We get caught up in our stories, our preconceived ideas, our expectations, our reactivity to what's going on. And meditation is a great place to discover that, to see that, and learn to let go of it, or learn not to be limited by it, to learn to listen to ourselves in a deeper and deeper way. I think that what we learn in meditation translates very well to listening. Because as we listen, we can listen to the same thing, pay attention to the same thing inside of ourselves. Are there preconceived ideas and judgments? Are there fears and anxieties that get in the way? What's going on inside of us? And can we let go? Not let go so that we are, can't take care of ourselves in that conversation, but let go so we can listen more deeply. And I think we can take care of ourselves better if we listen deeply to the inside and outside. Sometimes it's good to pay attention to the great vista that's outside of you, and sometimes it's good to pay attention to the great vista inside of you. It's a great world, inside and out. Ideally, the door would be open, always open, so that you flow back and forth and you can take both into place. For me, I feel that my listening, or my speaking, both, listening and speaking in conversation, works the best when I have 50% of my attention on the person who's speaking and 50% of my attention on what's going on inside of me as I speak. And if I can do that really well, then something happens in that communication or in me where there's an aspect of me that disappears. the self-consciousness of me disappears, or some kind of boundary between me and the other person disappears. And it isn't that I become one with the other person and then kind of do foolish things, but rather that I'm kind of, part of me, my self-consciousness is not there, but I'm very aware of the feelings I have, the thoughts I have, the beliefs I have. I'm tracking myself, or tracking what's going on inside of me during that time. And to the best of my ability, I'm tracking the other person, what they're saying, what's going on. And with that full attention to both realms, this beautiful thing happens that I kind of like self-consciousness disappears and it's just there in a very clear and open way that feels very akin to deep meditation practice where there's a lot of freedom and openness and clarity of just being here. So mindful listening takes an ordinary activity of listening and transforms it into something that has tremendous value and potential for us, where we can grow and develop on the path of freedom, liberation, and as an act of compassion, can also be of tremendous value to the people who we listen to, who we get to listen deeply to. They get listened to. So, I've talked enough. Now it's my turn to listen to you. So any thoughts you'd like to say or any comments about this, responses? There's a mic over there. Liz?
Well, this is helpful to me. I was with a group of women last Sunday, and we were each sharing something, and there was one person who, I guess I would describe it as sort of going off on a tangent, and it lasted pretty long. It was like 5 minutes, which for me was a long time to listen without interacting, and because of the nature of what this person was saying, and I just noticed how, in my body, how uncomfortable I was. And it's like, you know, when I listen, sometimes there's this sensitivity there that's strong, and so I could feel the other people's listening and what was going on with them. I mean, I could sense it. It was tense, and people were getting impatient. And so I just wondered if you have any thoughts about that. Like, sometimes the listening is uncomfortable, and you feel like you want to say something or even ask a question or something, and for me it's like, what do you do in that situation? Because I don't want to be rude, but I also am suffering, struggling. Anyway, my question.
Well, thank you. That's a great question, and again, you open a door to a big panoramic vista. We can go to different directions with that, your statement here. And the way, one place I like to go is that back to meditation. You can't underestimate how valuable it is to have your meditations be uncomfortable. Just because you're uncomfortable in meditation, don't think that it's a bad meditation. It might be some of the best meditations ever in terms of what you learn and how you learn to be comfortable with discomfort. If you're uncomfortable meditation, it's like a little laboratory. You get to study what it's like to be uncomfortable. You get to let go of some of the impulses that come up when you're uncomfortable, the judgments you have about it. And you learn to be in a relaxed way about being uncomfortable. And so if you come into a social situation like that, then yes, there are definitely social situations where you feel uncomfortable, but you can know how to breathe with it. You know how to kind of settle back. Okay, this is uncomfortable, and I'll just be with it. As opposed to some people's attitude towards discomfort is they have to do something. Something has to happen. I have to fix this. And I think meditation can teach you that nothing needs to be fixed. Just relax. Breathe. So that can be a very helpful step. And then on the other end of the spectrum, sometimes it's appropriate to interrupt someone and say something. But how to do it caringly and compassionately is part of the issue, part of the point. And some people actually, who talk a lot, sometimes expect to be interrupted and stopped. And occasionally they appreciate it. you know, they're like, you know, lost and going off. But how do you do it in a caring way? And sometimes you can do it by active listening, where you kind of try to find some place where you can insert something that responds to it or speaks something they just said or repeat it back or say, that must have been hard, but that was really hard. Or say, you know, wow, this is a lot. You just said a lot. It had a big impact. I really took this in. I think it's better. Let's take a moment and wait. I think we need to kind of process it now or something like that. But, you know, it depends how skillful you are. It depends how capable they are of, you know, hearing it. Good luck.
Gail?
One of the nice things about, maybe terrible things about listening is that active listening does involve a loss of control. And some people don't want to lose control. But in order to listen well, you have to lose control of the conversation, lose control of what people, to allow people to speak and go where they're going, within limit, of course. But there is a lack of control. But at the same time, there's a lot of self-control or self-monitoring or self that goes on at the same time in order to stay in that mode in a useful way. Okay, thank you.
Gail,
yes.
Thank you for your talk. And it reminded me of learning several years ago, learning something about the culture of deaf people who use primarily American Sign Language. And what I was taught was when you communicate with American Sign Language, the expectation for both communicators will be that you remember what the person told you about themselves and that they will remember what you told them.
Nice.
I just thought, really? I said, yes. That's the expectation. It's not always met, but that is the expectation.
Interesting. That's very nice. Yeah, imagine. I was thinking about that, someone who's deaf. I guess they listen through their eyes. And they pick up a lot more. You know, if they're listening to someone who doesn't speak sign language, they have to listen to, you know, body language and gestures and all kinds of things. And it's probably the visual world is much richer. They pick up much more. Just like someone who's blind uses sometimes their hearing, and they hear things that is available to everyone to listen to, but we're not tuned in or sensitive to hear the subtleties and that they do. So it's a rich world to pay attention to. Yes, right, Rune.
Within the Eightfold Path for wise speech, how does the guidelines from the Buddha to wise speech can also, I see kind of a link to wise listening, and I'm just, how can we apply? Is there a link besides what you said about care, listening and responding with care and compassion?
I think, the closest, if you stay within the framework of right speech, involves knowing that your speech is honest, knowing that your speech is supportive and friendly, knowing that it's timely, knowing that it's useful. So you have to pay attention to the situation well enough and to yourself to know that those things are the case. It takes some reviewing, some consideration, some deeper reflection, which is part of, I think, right listening. You have to listen first before you can know it's right speech. But the other thing about the Eightfold Path is I kind of think of listening as a variation of mindfulness. So the seventh step in the Eightfold Path is right mindfulness, wise mindfulness. And so, it's mindfulness with our ears.
I was glad to hear this story about uncomfortable listening. It reminded me of a time that was a huge lesson for me many years ago. My son, who's now 20, he was, I think, a third grader. And his teacher was just in her second or third year of teaching, and she had a large class, over 30 kids. And she was giving instructions, and my son just was very aloof and said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And she was clearly upset with this, and I got a note that day, and I could tell by the handwriting that she had written it really angrily. And he had detention or something like that. And I didn't quite understand the whole incident, and so I went first thing in the morning to go speak with her before school started. And as soon as I walked in the room, there was this bristling, icy feeling in her eyes, and then she spoke to me very firmly, and this energy came at me, and I felt like I was shaking. And I said, "Maybe we need to talk with the principal about this," because it was not going to have a good understanding, just the two of us. So she said yes, and I went by the principal's office, set up an appointment for just a couple hours later, went home and called my mother. And she basically told me to pray. Because I was worried that I was not prepared. I did not know how to handle this situation with this angry teacher. And so I did. And what I learned was, in this most uncomfortable moment, then in meeting with her and the principal and the vice principal, about my son saying, "Yeah, yeah, yeah," is that this teacher was acting out of fear. And in this office, she broke down and cried. Mm. And I learned so much that we are all broken, we all act out of fear, and that when I came to that meeting, I was praying that all of us would listen and speak truth about being prepared and how to guide these children and not be surprised by their actions or their words, but be prepared to teach them instead of just discipline them.
Beautiful.
And so because I had a heart of wanting to listen, wanting to be helpful, I felt like I could see better, more clearly, this broken person and how fearful she was of losing control of the class and not knowing how to handle the situation.
So there was something inside of her, was the Rama, was, you know, something inside of her needed to be listened to and come out. Yeah. It wasn't on the surface, wasn't there with her anger. And so maybe the fear, and so finally it broke open.
Yes.
It was great that you offered that, you could do that. I hope it made a difference.
Yes, well, I still have to practice this daily, but I thought I would share.
So one more in the back.
Thanks, Gil. You were talking about letting go and taking care of yourself at the same time. Could you speak a little bit more of the balance and how to approach that balance?
I appreciate the question, but can I ask you a counter question? Is why is this an important question for you?
Because in taking the practice in everyday life, specifically at work, it is people around me are not in the practice. they have a very different practice in that sense. So there's a time that I need to push forward and push hard, sometimes hard. So it's keeping that 50-50 is difficult in that sense.
So I think different social environments have different the rules, different cultures of how things interact and how things work. And so, you know, if a friend of yours has just had a loss, someone's died, then maybe it's not wrong to call it a rule, but then you would sit, maybe go over and sit with the person in the living room and just go for a walk with them, just let them speak and hear them out and really know you're listening. Some other time, and nothing's dramatic is like that's going on in the life, and you're going out to a coffee shop, and you're having tea or coffee, and and you're having a great time, just a lovely time. You know, just both of you are really enjoying yourselves arguing about politics. You know, like duking it out and being fast and one on top of the other, and it's just part of the fun. And you know, to say, oh, let's slow down and listen to each other deeply, and you know, it's not fun anymore. And so you have to know, you know, different settings, different ways of conversing. So I can imagine in some work environments and professional environments, the currency of what works, of what is expected, and how you get things done is a particular way of having conversations. Someone recently, I was at an academic kind of conference recently, or kind of seminar I was part of, and there was someone in the seminar who was rapid fire responses. I said some things like rapid fire, like you know, and then it was like in a long list of, you know, defense, you know, kind of proof. This is why it is, and there was no space. It was like, you know, I was kind of so surprised. And later, I guess the person thought that maybe he was a little bit too much, and he said a number of things, explaining himself. One of the things he said was that he's a professor at a German university, and he said in the German academic environment, this is what's expected. And so that's how we talk there. So I came here and was just doing the same thing again. And but in America, we don't do that much in academic environments. So maybe it works there. It's expected there. So anyway, so a little bit you have to understand what's expected and what's required, and maybe you have to participate in a certain way. Or is there space to change the flow of there? Is there space for you to take care of yourself, space for you not to participate that way, make more space? After a while, they realize you're a little odd, but it's. But actually, they like coming into your office and talking to you, even though you're odd. And why are you odd? Because you just sit quietly and listen. So, anyway, is that meaningful, the response? Or I'm sure it's not adequate, but is it enough?
it's food for thought.
Great.
And one more follow up.
Yes.
When you say take care of yourself, what do you mean?
Take care of yourself so you don't get hurt. So that's the bottom one. And then if you could do better, then you not only don't you get hurt, but you benefit from the whole thing.
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
Sometimes
the
speech
is... Okay.
So sometimes the speech you're listening to is intended to hurt. Do you have any guidance to what to do with that?
Well, again, you have to. There's so many different situations where what to do depends on the context. Sometimes you just leave the state. You know, sometimes that's the wisest thing to do, is just get out of there and enough of this. I mean, that's an extreme situation. That's one end, right? The extreme. Sometimes what I like to do is to, if I can, if it seems appropriate in the conversation, is to tell the person, you know, that really hurt, that hurts. I feel a lot of pain hearing that. That's difficult to hear for me. Or when you speak that way, you know, I feel afraid. And generally, I find that most people, if I let them know the impact of the words are on me, it just changes the conversation dramatically. Because once it's been said, very few people want to admit out loud that they're trying to hurt you with their words. You know, that might be the intention, but once you put it out in the open, like, you know, oh, well, you know. And so then usually it shifts the conversation quickly.